Programming on KSTK is provided by First Bank, helping customers access their accounts electronically using online banking, mobile check deposit, online bill pay, and more. First Bank, the one who's here.
In local weather today, it's sunny with a high near 64 degrees and north winds around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, clear with a low around 42 degrees and northwest winds around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Tomorrow, which is Saturday, expect sun with a high near 63, northeast winds around 5 miles per hour, becoming southeast in the afternoon. In local news, award-winning Alaska journalist Kyle Hopkins will be speaking in Wrangell this weekend about his career as a journalist and reporting on sexual violence. Alaska has the fourth highest number of missing and murdered Indigenous cases in the country, followed by New Mexico, Washington, and Arizona. In collaboration with the Wrangell Cooperative Association for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Awareness Day on May 5th, Hopkins will also share his experience as a reporter at Chief Shake's Tribal House. Kyle Hopkins knew early on that journalism was his thing. Not so much journalism itself, but he knew he wanted to surround himself with journalists.
I like being around them and talking to them. I was like, they're just funny and smart and like feisty.
After about 15 years of producing daily news at Anchorage Daily News, he decided to focus on why things happen and why they aren't getting fixed. He found that a lot of these questions remained unanswered when it comes to sexual violence. Sexual violence in Alaska runs high. Close to half of women in the state have experienced it, and one in three Alaska Native adults are survivors of intimate partner violence. Hopkins says that a lot of public safety and criminal justice failures allow people to get away with sexual assault in Alaska, including murder.
In cases that, you know, in my opinion, could be solved if we had better systems in place, if we, you know, had, better priorities.
His early reporting in 2018 turned into the Lawless series published by ProPublica and Alaska Daily News. Hopkins won a 2020 Pulitzer Prize for it. He says the focus on Lawless was not necessarily the devastating stories on individuals who experienced sexual assault, but more so accountability.
How can it be in this day and age that someone goes missing and is not found? Or how can it be in, you know, 2024 that an Alaskan is murdered in a small community and no one is held accountable?
Hopkins was born in Sitka and spent his childhood in southeast Alaska. He says when he was a kid, it was easy to assume adults would fix these types of problems. But now, as an adult, the severe problems still exist. He says journalism can help with that by putting spotlights on the failure of systems, like criminal justice. He says one of the challenges he faces is that when he puts spotlights on institutions, the doors start to close, like getting interviews and public records.
I did a story recently in November about a cold case in Kotzebue, I was following up on questions that I first asked like 2 years prior, right? Like I'd asked for records like 2 years earlier and was still waiting on them.
Although he's done extensive journalism work on sexual assault and missing and murdered Indigenous people in Alaska, he says it's not his role to tell their stories.
Sometimes it feels a little uncomfortable for me to be like a spokesperson for this type of work because I don't feel like that's an appropriate role for me.
That's where his other project, Unheard, comes in. He says he and his team from ProPublica and Alaska Daily News worked with people to tell their own stories in their own words about being sexual assault survivors. His discomfort in telling other people's stories is one reason why he speaks with school-age students on journalism.
The older I get, the less comfortable I feel telling other people's stories. part is like one way that I'm trying to just deal with that feeling is I'm really interested in talking to schools about it, talking to kind of kid, you know, like middle school, high school kids about like, hey, you have a story to tell.
He hopes to encourage young people to tell their stories and get into journalism as a career. Kevin Gadzi is WCA's Domestic Violence Prevention Specialist. He mentions how Hopkins will speak at Chief Shaik's Tribal House in Wrangell for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Day.
After he shares his experiences and information, we are going to have a ceremony to both remember those who are missing and who have been murdered and lost, but also a way for those who have experienced trauma themselves and in their family.
Indigenous women have up to 10 times a murder rate nationwide, but these rates are miscalculated since there is little data on missing and murdered Indigenous people in urban areas. In Wrangell, I'm Colette Zarnicki. Kyle Hopkins will speak at Chief Shaik's Tribal House in Wrangell at 3 p.m. this Sunday. The event is free to the public. In regional news, opioid overdoses are spiking across the United States, and Alaska is no exception. Naloxone is a life-saving medication that reverses overdoses, and over the last couple years, some groups in Petersburg have redoubled their efforts to distribute it. But, as KFSK's Shelby Herbert reports, police leadership is skeptical about how much it's actually helping.
Petersburg first responders, law enforcement, and medical professionals know that fentanyl has reached the quiet shores of Mitkoff Island. They're on the front lines of the opioid crisis, where they're seeing larger quantities of fentanyl in town. And public health nurse Erin Michael says it's hard to envision a long-term solution to a problem that has gotten worse by orders of magnitude every year.
It is very, very challenging. And then being in Alaska makes it even more challenging.
But in the short term, some entities in Petersburg are trying to stem the tide of opioid-related deaths with naloxone. That's a medication that rapidly reverses an overdose. It's a nose spray administered through a device called Narcan. Petersburg's public health office is working with several different organizations in town to get as many Narcan kits into as many hands as possible. Michael says she's watched local demand for Narcan kits skyrocket over the last couple years. But she says not everybody who asks for a kit is planning on using it on themselves. Many want to have one on hand to protect other people.
I think that the stigma has gone away from people having these, and we're looking at it as just like a part of a first aid kit. You would have, you know, a mouth shield with your first aid kit. You'd have bandages. This would be considered another part of your first aid kit in case somebody needs help with an overdose and needs that extra push to help them start breathing again.
It's easy for anyone to pick up a kit at the public health office. Staff members don't check IDs and don't even require that people sign the forms for the kits with their real names. But that easy access is troubling to James Kerr, Petersburg's police chief. He says it's frustrating when his officers respond to suspected overdoses and they see Narcan kits at the scene, just out of reach.
We see it everywhere when we go to search warrants. And we're seeing used Narcan and brand new ones ready to be used.
Kerr says he's worried that the kits make people who use illicit drugs feel dangerously confident about the doses they're taking.
Narcan has its place. It saves lives. No one's going to doubt that. But I also think that it has made people lose the fear of the drug.
Aaron Hankins is the director of Petersburg's Volunteer Fire Department and EMS. He keeps it available at the local fire department for anyone who needs it. No questions asked. But he says he's heard about parties in Petersburg where the presence of naloxone emboldens illicit drug users to take larger quantities of drugs. That said, Hankins is totally on board with community members having naloxone on hand to potentially save lives before emergency responders can reach them.
And remember that these people are people's sons, daughters, their parents. People who suffer overdoses are still human too. And so this is only one piece of the puzzle that we're trying to provide to make sure everyone lives and they get that chance to go to treatment.
Concerns about naloxone are far from uncommon, according to Dr. Emily Einstein with the National Institution on Drug Abuse. She says she's encountered skepticism about the medication from members of law enforcement and even lawmakers from all over the country.
And I think the biggest misconception is where people think that having naloxone around is going to encourage drug use, and the evidence shows that's just not the case. But the reality is they are happening, and we need to have the tools available to reverse them.
Travis Hedwig researches substance misuse prevention at the University of Alaska Anchorage. He says he's sympathetic to first responders who doubt the efficacy of naloxone when they see more kits getting distributed, but overdoses continuing on, seemingly unabated.
Our law enforcement and first responders have to do a very difficult job. It's a job that over time starts to test your empathy. Like, gosh, we're seeing this uptick. Nobody really knows why. All I know is that I'm having to respond to more people.
He says Narcan is an important tool for making a dent in the state's ever-increasing overdose death toll. But he hopes he'll see a day when health experts and people working on the front lines of the opioid crisis can stop talking past each other on the issue.
There really is potential to be talking with one another in a more respectful way, in a more holistic way, in a more community-engaged way.
As for how to solve Alaska's overdose crisis in the long term, Hedwig says he doesn't have all the answers. But he says the big picture solution also has to start with empathy, recognizing illicit drug users as people, making sure their basic needs are met, and reconnecting them with their communities. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
A little over a year after it was created, Sitka's Tourism Task Force has completed its work without settling on a magic number of annual cruise passengers. Instead, the assembly-appointed group adopted recommendations including reducing peak days, engaging with the visitor industry, and establishing a permanent commission to take its place. KCAW's Meredith Reddick reports.
Sitka's cruise ship numbers have nearly tripled since 2019, with some days, such as May 2nd, pushing the number of visitors above 9,000. Task Force member Jeremy Plank supported reducing those peak days, or days with more than one large ship, saying it was a common problem in an otherwise polarizing discussion.
The one thing that I find resounding through everybody that I've talked to is that the peak days were the problem that we had. And I think that looking forward, if we can stabilize that and other initiatives that we're talking about here tonight, I think that that gives Sitka the best chance to move forward while additional data can be collected.
The task force recommended reducing peak days and suggested that the city, which manages lightering facilities at Crescent Harbor, reduce peak days by limiting the size of ships that use those facilities. Another recommendation on the table was whether the city should pursue agreements with the cruise industry. Some members said the city needed more data before entering into those conversations. Task force member Camille Ferguson said she felt torn.
I don't know if the word agreement is the right word in that, or understanding with the industry, some sort of something. You know, we should be communicating with the industry and our community so we understand each other that there is an issue and we have to come together to address these issues.
Task Force Chair Jim Michener said conversations with the industry now could help prevent future problems, like the unexpected visit from the cruise ship New Amsterdam on May 2nd.
You know, if there's life-threatening emergencies, of course you may come into town, et cetera. But if all of a sudden Ketchikan doesn't have a dock, that doesn't mean we need to be willing to accept 50 more ships. And I think that's the value of the MOA and the MOU. That maybe isn't being talked about is that we can prescribe those things ahead of time to avoid a further pitfall.
Ultimately, the task force voted to recommend that the city pursue a non-binding agreement with the industry. They also voted on four other directives, including establishing a permanent tourism commission, regulating e-bikes and downtown smoking areas, and maintaining